This is the sixth day of this October 2011 seven-day session. And today we'll take up a koan. This is in the collection of koans called the Mumon Kan, or the Gateless Barrier. Number 28, Ryutan blows out a candle. Case is a long one. I'll read just that and then comment on it before going on to Mumon's commentary and verse. Toksan called on Ryutan and questioned him far into the night. At last Ryutan said, "It's getting late. You should go now." Toksan made his bows and lifted the blind to leave. Seeing that it was dark, he turned back and said, "It's dark outside." Ryutan thereupon lit a candle and handed it to him. Just as Toksan reached to take it, Ryutan blew it out. At this, Toksan was suddenly enlightened. He then made bows. "What have you realized?" asked Ryutan. Toksan replied, "I'll never again doubt the words of the old monk who is renowned throughout the world." Actually, I think I'll wait and read the rest of the case after we get to it. So this is one of the more famous koans in the among the hundreds of koans in collections. Toksan is the Japanese name of of the Chinese Deshan. We're going to use the Japanese names because it's just, I think not only is it easier to pronounce the Japanese names correctly, but I think it's easier to relate to the names than to the Japanese names than to the Chinese names. But we must never forget that these are Chinese people, masters and other people in these koans. So we do have some material about this Deshan. His dates are 819 to 914. So 95, he lived to be 95. It's a very old age. Especially at that time, this is some 1,300 years ago. When he was young, he made a thorough study of the rules of the Vinaya, which are the monastic rules and regulations. And this was a respected path. This is not Zen. It was studying monastic rules and regulations toward the aspiration to really master them. And he was a scholar. He became an authority on the Diamond Sutra. The Diamond Sutra, the most notable thing about the Diamond Sutra is its emphasis on emptiness, the no-thingness of things. And the Sanskrit word is shunyata. We mentioned emptiness earlier as the very marrow, the essential understanding that comes from awakening. Because of his mastery of the Diamond Sutra, he earned the nickname Diamond Zhu. And he acquired quite a reputation for his academic authority. And then he heard about this Zen school, or let's call it Chan. Heard about Chan and its insistence that is only through direct apprehension of reality that can come to understanding, only through direct experience, and that it's we have to go beyond words and sutras. And he became enraged. And he heard not only about it, but he heard that in the south of China it was flourishing. And so he went on a rant about it. And then he said here, well, excuse me, I'm reading from a book called Zen's Chinese Heritage, The Masters and Their Teachings by Andy Ferguson. And so he went on a rant and he said, those who leave home, he's referring to monks, may study the great meaning of Buddhism for 1,000 kalpas and spend a further 10,000 kalpas performing detailed Buddhist practice, yet they still won't become a Buddha. How dare those southern devils say that just by pointing at the human mind, one can see self-nature and attain Buddhahood. Just imagine, this was really revolutionary, this insistence that we could see, by seeing into our Buddha nature and coming to awakening, this could be done in this lifetime. Previously, it had been seen as something that you would have to labor, as he says, you'd have to labor as a monk, you'd have to be as a monk. No layperson would have a chance at this. You'd have to labor as a monk for lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and slowly make your way up the evolutionary ladder until you finally became a Buddha. And then Zen came along and said, come on. From the very beginning, all beings are Buddha. This is our nature. All we have to do is wake up to that. Well, he was very much invested in his own paradigm, and he thought he would have to go on a campaign. So he says, I'll go drag them from their caves and exterminate their ilk and thus repay the kindness of Buddha. Yeah, it is ironic, isn't it? Yeah. So we can see, get a little window into what the character of this man, what a fearsome absolutely sure of himself. So he saddled up with his sutras, all of his texts on his back, and he set out for the south of China. And as he went along the road, he came upon an old woman. This old woman has become very famous in the centuries that have come down since then. She was on the road selling dim sum. You know, another translation has it as pastries. But let's make it dim sum. So he was hungry, he stopped to rest, and he bought a small order of dim sum. So the old woman pointed at his bundle. She may have had a staff, a crooked old staff. She said, oh, what are those books there? Sonny? And he said, why, these are the commentaries on the Diamond Sutra, good woman. And he says, these are the Qinglong commentaries. She said, oh, and what sutra do they expound on? And he said, the Diamond Sutra. You can imagine the pride with which he said that. And then she said, "Well, I have a question for you, if you don't mind. If you answer it, I could do the old woman's voice, but I don't want to take that away from Roshi Kapoor. He always would do the imitation of the old woman, and just in homage to him, I'm going to leave that alone." She said, "If you answer it right, then I'll donate the dim sum to you. But if you can't answer, then you must go elsewhere. Go somewhere else and have your meal." Now, Tokson said, that's a good deal. Go ahead." So she says, "In the Diamond Sutra, it says..." Now, he was probably already bowled over that this this vendor on the road would be able to quote the Diamond Sutra. But she says, "It says, past mind can't be attained, present mind can't be attained, future mind can't be attained." And then that's the end of the quote from the Diamond Sutra. Then she says, "Now, I want to know, good monk, what mind are you revealing right now?" Now, there's going to need to insert here the slang for the meal that he had just ordered is called mind refreshers. Translated in English, mind refreshers. And so she was playing off that. What mind are you revealing or refreshing right now? First, let's appreciate this statement from the Diamond Sutra. Where is the mind of the past? Where is it other than right here? Where is the mind of the future? Right here. And even so-called present mind is in flux. So none of these three can be attained, can be grasped or held. So she really took the wind out of his sails, and he was speechless. So he asked her, he must have poked pride and found out that she had been a Zen student, or was a Zen student at the time, and he asked her, "All right then, is there a Zen monastery in the area?" And she gave him directions to the nearest place. Now, this is a very significant turn already here, that he was willing. He had set off on the road, hell-bent for leather, to take these Zen people down a notch. And already now, with her skillful means, he's inquiring about where he might find one. And it's not just to exterminate them, but he's clearly been humbled. So he goes to Lungtan. It's the name of the master of this monastery. And he gets to the Dharma Hall and he says, he announces, "Long have I heard of Lungtan," which in Chinese... it means Dragon Marsh. "Long have I heard of Lungtan, but now that I've got here, I see no marsh, nor is there any dragon to be seen." Now, here, this is not just a nonsensical statement. Remember, this is the master of the Diamond Sutra, the sutra that emphasizes emptiness. So you hear what he's doing here as a challenge to this master Lungtan. Now that I'm here, I see no marsh and no dragon. From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. And I'm going to get back to the Japanese here, Ryutan. This is the name used in the koan, the Japanese name. So Ryutan says, now you have indeed seen the dragon marsh, the real dragon marsh. Once you've seen the emptiness of this, then you've really seen it. And at that, Toksan said nothing, but remained there. So there's a whole story there that we can only speculate about why he would say nothing and remain there. And that brings us to the point of our present case. Toksan and Ryutan talked about the Dharma far into the night. We don't know about that conversation. No doubt Ryutan let him expound on the Diamond Sutra a little and then just questioned him about it, gave him enough rope to hang himself, poked some holes in his understanding, perhaps exposed the way that he had become attached to the letter of the sutra, the words. Who knows? We don't know. But whatever it was, that discussion may have lasted hours, led to what follows. Before that, Ryutan finally said to him, it's getting late, you better go now. So Toksan took leave of Ryutan, made his bows. He stepped to the door, he lifted the blind to leave. He saw that it was pitch dark out. Koans are metaphors, basically. And this is a significant part of the story. He saw that it was pitch dark out. So he turns back. And he just says, it's dark outside. Being new to the monastery, he probably felt especially vulnerable. He wouldn't know how to get back to his room. So Ryutan lit a candle, and as he handed it to him, and Toksan reached to take it, Ryutan blew it out. And at that, Toksan was suddenly enlightened. The famous Lao Tzu, the great Taoist master, said, when darkness is at its darkest, there is the gateway to all spiritual insight. what is darkness in Zen? It's not knowing. Every individual Zen practice, breath, koan, or other, it's all for the purpose of cleaning the mind, purifying the mind of its mental attachments, and delivering us into a state of darkness, which is a state of great openness. So long as we are clinging to our opinions, our notions, our particular mental models of how reality is, which is mostly unconscious, so long as we are clinging to these things, the mind is not fully receptive, it's not open. Before I came to the Zen Center, I worked at a hospital, a psychiatric unit, and there was a man, one of the patients was severely depressed, and his psychiatrist ordered electroshock therapy. And I was assigned to be there for the procedure itself, and then to be at his bedside when he awoke after the treatment. It was an unforgettable thing to see him. Here he was, he had come in and been just absolutely, well, severely depressed, terribly, terribly depressed, black cloud hanging over his head. It was really pitiable. When he came to after that treatment, the idea behind it is that it sort of resets your brain. I think another way to understand it is it's, you know, that old game Etch-a-Sketch. It's like shaking these metal filings. So after you've done your design, I think they still sell this. I think I heard about it somewhere. But after you've done your design with the knobs, then you just to get a clean slate, you just shake it, and now it's clean again. Well, that's very much what electroshock therapy did and still does. It's not the brutal, primitive kind of thing that it is portrayed in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that old movie. they've refined it quite a bit. I know someone else who went through this and emerged much better. But the idea is that you emerge from it afresh with that mental burden with all of your notions about yourself and others, the world, what a grim and bleak world it is, and how worthless you are. It's all washed out. And sure enough, when he woke up, he was like a child. His eyes were wide, he looked, he smiled, and he asked questions. At first, it took him a few minutes to get his bearings. He was happy. I I've heard that you need a series of those. There's a kind of a regression, so you need to have a series of them before they discharge you. But he did leave the hospital a happy man. We can get a little taste of this through Zazen. Everyone surely has had the experience after a round of relatively good absorption in your practice, especially late in Sesshin, of spinning off the tan for Kinhin, and having the sense, it's palpable, the sense of newness, freshness. It's like we're starting anew. Sesshin is, and certainly coming out of Sesshin, is way more so than just after a round of sitting and during Sesshin. And especially doing, this can happen outside of Sesshin as well, of course, but it's just more noticeable when we're doing all this intensive Zazen day after day. It's like Sesshin is like a kind of a mind washing. You have to go through a week of successive wash and rinse cycles, but it can shake you up pretty well. But at the end, you're clean. So Toksan blows out the candle. Excuse me, Ryutan blows out the candle, and Toksan came to enlightenment. There's a saying in Zen, the great round mirror of wisdom is black as pitch. This is an aspect of Zen that is quite quite the inverse of our Christian ethos, where we want to move to the light, find the light, and we find the darkness. And out of that darkness comes tremendous release and light. So then Toksan made his bows to Ryutan, and Ryutan looked at him and said, What have you realized? To which Toksan replied, I'll never again doubt the words of the old monk who is renowned throughout the world. He's referring to the Buddha. The next day, now we're continuing with the case. The next day, Ryutan entered the hall and declared to the assembly of monks, among you there is a fellow whose teeth are like swords and whose mouth is like a bowl of blood. Strike him with a stick and he won't turn his head. One day he will climb to the highest of all peaks and establish our way there. Another point of the koan. What is Ryutan saying about this reborn Toksan? Then Toksan placed his notes, all that bundle of notes and commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. Went out in front of the Dharma Hall and made a little bonfire. He held up a torch and said, "Even though one masters various profound teachings, it is like placing a single hair in vast space. Even if one gains all the essential knowledge in the world, it is like throwing a drop of water into a deep ravine." And having said that, he set fire to his books. And then he made more further bows, and he left. So you see here the complete conversion, converting from this worship of the words to a rejection of them. That's the end of the case, and then Mumon's commentary. The commentary basically recounts what I already read about earlier, what happened earlier when Toksan encountered this old woman along the road. So I won't reread that. But I'll read the part that I didn't already read. Mumon says, "It has to be said that his former words and his latter words were inconsistent." It's a little dry understatement on the part of Mumon. And he says, "Ryutan is like a mother who, because she loves her child too much, does not realize how meddlesome she herself is." This is a typical Chinese style, especially Mumon of where he's with tongue in cheek. He seems to be finding fault with someone, where actually he's, how can he not admire what a brilliant master Ryutan was. He says, "Loves her child too much, does not realize how meddlesome she herself is. Finding a bit of live coal in Toksan, he immediately poured muddy water over him, annihilating everything at once. Looking at the matter calmly, you can say it was all just a farce." And then the verse, "Seeing the face is better than hearing the name. Hearing the name is better than seeing the face. He may have saved his nose, but alas, he lost his eyes." Seeing the face is better than hearing the name. This is a play on the name Ryutan, which has something to do with well-known Ryutan, famous Ryutan. But there's more there. Seeing the face is better than hearing the name. This is the insistence of the Zen school. Hearing about the truth, reading it in sutras, reading it in texts, reading about it, can't compare to seeing the thing itself for oneself. But then the next line is the opposite. Hearing the name is better than seeing the face. What does Mumon mean here? This is another point of the koan. He's not just tossing around nonsense. That's what many of us think. Early in our entry into Zen, we hear these stories. They sound so nonsensical, and you can get the idea that these masters were just trying to turn the tables on us by just saying a bunch of silly things to supposedly confound the minds of the students. It's not that there isn't any of that in Zen, but almost all of it, there is real serious meaning behind it, as there is in this line. He may have saved his nose, but alas, he lost his eyes. It's another very elegant metaphor on the part of Mumon here, referring back to the case, what happened. We've reached a point in Sesshin where everyone, every single person, no exceptions, every person has turned down the light of these mental attachments very far. It's getting very dim in the mind, and it's a very promising state of Sesshin. There's that verse from the Bible, something to the effect that to enter the kingdom of heaven you must become like a child. All of us have moved quite far in that direction. We have shed much of the buzzing material, the stuff in the mind that does nothing but obscure the wisdom of our true nature. Our minds have become much quieter, much more simple, much more open, more receptive. Anything is possible at this stage of Sesshin. Actually, anything is possible from the outside of Sesshin. Anything is possible outside Sesshin, really. But now, the condition of the mind is in a very fertile state. The worst thing anyone could do now is to start to invite back in more thoughts about after Sesshin, looking back on how the Sesshin has gone so far. These thoughts on their own find their way into the mind, but we don't have to entertain them. They come and they go if we leave them alone. If we leave them alone, if we don't monkey around with these things, then we have the real prospect of the mind getting even quieter, more open, more ready. Takes the this ongoing work of returning our attention again and again and again, tirelessly to the practice. That will continue to open the mind more. There's a lot at stake now to reach this condition of the mind would take us another, what, 5.5 days, 6 days of intense work. Everything is ready. Stop now and recite the four vows.